even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/arsblog. Welcome to a brand new Arsblog Arscast right here on arsblog.com. Hope you're well. Apologies if my voice is a little bit croaky throughout this one, but it's not that I've been shouting, but I've been doing a bit of traveling, and you know how the air on airplanes plays havoc with your voice. You tend to pick up all this recycled, regurgitated air, and people's farts and coughs go into the air system, and they're pumped from the back of the plane straight into your unsuspecting mouth. You don't know anything about it, but you're actually eating other people's farts and coughs whenever you go on a plane. So that's kind of why my voice is a little bit croaky. Farts and coughs that weren't mine. You know, it's one thing when they're your own, but like other people's. Anyway. But it was good. I had good travels. I was in Oslo. I was in Norway for the first time. And it was strange. I met quite a number of people who said to me, is this your first time in Norway? And I said, yes. And they went, oh my God, I can't believe this is your first time here in Oslo? It's like, yeah. You know, I'm from Ireland. When we travel places, we tend to go where it's warmer, where the weather isn't worse than it is here. So we go south, you know. Spain and things, the Canaries, Cyprus and all that. But it was great. I really loved Oslo. The people are super friendly. Maybe I was just really lucky. Oslo could be a town of absolute wankers, but everybody I met was spot on. Really nice, really helpful. And of course, they all spoke English, which was great. Very handy for me, of course, who doesn't speak any Norwegian whatsoever. I like the airport. I like the train in from the airport straight into the center of Oslo in like 20 minutes. It's brilliant. You go out and you get on the train and then you're there. Whereas here in Dublin, if you arrive in Dublin, you've got two ways of getting into the city center. You can get a bus or you can get a taxi. Bus is slow and, you know, full of farts and coughs and stuff like that. And a taxi, of course, is expensive. Although I've no idea how much the train cost, now that I think about it. I went to buy a ticket and the girl said, yeah, you don't need to do that. Just swipe your credit card and it'll do the business. And it did. It was great. Super efficient. But I actually have no idea how much it cost. It was probably really expensive. Seeing as everything else was pretty expensive over there. But that's because they're all oil barons, so I was told. Everybody owns a bit of the oil, you see, and they're all, you know, that's it. That's why everything is so expensive. And there's some weird, like, weird little things. Like, I was over giving a talk at the Norwegian Institute of Journalism. There was about 18 or 16 or 18 people in this workshop, and I was giving a talk about, I think, entrepreneurship and you know, how you can make your own business out of journalism and all that kind of stuff. And obviously, we were talking about Arsblog, so I gave them the full history of Arsblog, how it began, the origins of it from my humble beginnings as a terrible web designer, and how it became the site it is today. And while I was telling them the history of the site, a story occurred to me that I haven't thought of for a long time. And that was after about 2 years of doing Arsblog, maybe 2.5 years, I said to myself, now I said, I should probably tell my wife about this thing that I do every day, this website, because she had no idea. Mrs. Bloggs was doing her thing. She knew I was trying to do website stuff, but she didn't know quite what it was. And I said it to Mrs. Bloggs today when I came back. I was going, oh, I was telling them that story, remember, when I told you about Arsblog for the first time? And she was like, what? And I remember where we were. We were in this restaurant in Barcelona called Quatre Gats. We were in there, and I said to her, look, I've got something to tell you. And, of course, that's never a good thing, never a good sign when somebody says, I've got something to tell you. But I said, you know, this stuff I do upstairs in my office there, you know, website stuff. You know, I'm doing this stuff about Arsenal, and people are reading it, and they're, you know, they're liking it and all that kind of stuff. So it's, you know, it's now a fairly intrinsic part of my life. So I thought I should tell you, my wife, all about it. And they laughed at that story, actually. That was good. They laughed at all the right bits and looked serious and studious at the bits where I was trying to impart knowledge and education on them. But the day that it was happening, I was kind of nervous because it's been a while since I've done any kind of speaking like that, any public speaking. Obviously, I was an English teacher for a while in Spain, but that's a bit different because, A, you're either teaching kids or you're teaching adults, some of whom want to be there, most of whom, in fact, want to be there. That's why they're in a classroom and they're adults. They've chosen to be there. The children, of course, are very different. But it's been, God, I can't remember the last time I did. 2005 or something like that was the last time I did that. So I was feeling a little bit nervous, a little bit nervous. So I went up the street from where it was taking place and I found a bar. I went into the bar. It's open. There's people in the bar. They're sitting around. They're drinking. It was 12:30 in the day, I know. But hey, you know, a little something just to calm my nerves. That's all I wanted. I didn't want to go crazy, not at that time. So I went up to the bar, and the barman said something to me in Norwegian. I said, hello. And he went, oh, what can I get you? In his perfect, perfect English. And I said to him, can I please have a bullet bourbon? And he said, no. And I said, why not? And he said, you just can't. It's the law. After 1 o'clock, I can serve you hard liquor. But until then, you can only drink beer. So I was like, okay, fair enough. I didn't have a beer because the problem, if I'd had a beer about halfway through the talk, I would have been like, I'll be back in just a moment whilst I go over to that place there to do a wee, which I don't think is the most professional thing to do. So that's why I was just going to have something short and obviously a bit stronger. A beer is just a beer, whereas, you know, you get the old when you know, drink a whiskey. But there you go. That was the only real downside, I guess, to Norway, that if you want to drink whiskey in a bar before 1 o'clock, you simply can't do it. But that's the rules. And, you know, you got to live with them. Well, the people of Oslo and Norway, they certainly have to live with them. I don't. Because I don't live there. But I enjoyed it. I thought it was a really cool place. I'd like to go back at some point. I was out for dinner with some of the people from the Institute of Journalism. And then we caught about the last half an hour of the Champions League games in a bar called The Bohemian, maybe? La Boheme? I don't know what it was. But it was full of TV screens and full of people watching the matches. And quite a lot of Bayern Munich fans in there who were quite vocal in their unhappiness at what had happened to them against Porto, which, you know, kind of funny, you have to say. And then Luis Suarez doing all that stuff to David Luiz. Whew, people were laughing and pointing, you know, even far away. I'm sure David Luiz could feel all the people laughing and pointing at him. So that was my week. Spent some time just wandering around Oslo as well. And so it's absolutely lovely. Really nice. And not very big either. I guess, because, you know, I was able to go in a giant circle and, I ended up right back where I started, which tends to happen if you go in a giant circle. So if you've never been to Oslo and you're looking for somewhere to go, well, you should try it, provided you're also an oil baron and you can afford it. I'd say give it a bash. Why not? Why not? And this has not been paid for or suggested by the Norwegian Tourist Board, with whom I had absolutely no dealings whatsoever. So there you go. So that was kind of it. The other thing that I won't say it struck me this week, but I noticed it. And what's the deal with Twitter accounts of big websites wishing people happy birthday, like former footballers? But what's going on there? Like, who gives a fuck if it's somebody's birthday? This is now becoming a thing that, happy 47th birthday to Carlos Valderrama, or happy 38th birthday to Malcolm Christie, former Derby legend. Like, why? I wish they would stop doing that, because I find it unfeasibly annoying. Maybe that's just me, but where is it going to stop? They're going to, congratulate them on their communion day? Wedding anniversaries? The day their dog died? What is going on? So football websites, using your Twitter account to wish random footballers happy birthday, well, please, stick to the football. Stop it. Maybe I should just, mute them or not, But they're all doing it. That's the problem. They're all doing it. Now it'll become so commonplace that we'll get every footballer that ever lived is going to be wished happy birthday on Twitter, and we won't be able to escape it. When they get Twitter in our minds, Twitter implants in our brains, and we'll wake up seeing these happy birthday messages to all the footballers who ever lived on that day, who were ever born on that day, and who died on that day. But that could be just me being a little bit overly sensitive to stuff. It's been a long week, what can I tell you? Right, I suppose we should get on and talk about Arsenal and football and all that kind of stuff, given that there is a rather important game taking place at Wembley Stadium this weekend. So let's talk about that and other stuff besides, with a couple of guests. First off, from GunnarHollick.com. It is the Gunnar Hollick. Good evening to you, sir.
Good evening, Blogs. Thanks for inviting me again.
My pleasure, as always. And Andrew Allen, good evening to you.
Hello to you, sir.
Hollick, can I start with you? And maybe it's just me, because I've been away and not sort of on top of things. But we've got an FA Cup semi-final tomorrow. And is it me, or does it feel a little bit underwhelming?
No, I think it might be you, because I've started to get the buzz this afternoon. Right. My tweet is kind of, we're 49 hours away from a trip to Wembley, and it doesn't change the older you get. You thought I'd have been a bit more cynical about it, wouldn't you? But
yeah,
no, it's I'm not in full agreement with the semi-finals being played at Wembley, but that isn't going to be changed now, because the bloody thing's got to be paid for. Mm. And, if we're having problems sorting out the ticket allocation for Wembley, what the hell would it be like for Villa Park and Hillsborough? So,
yeah.
I have got the buzz a little bit, I have to say.
All right, then it's just me. Andrew, how are you feeling about it now? Are your nerves tingling?
Excitement's building. Yeah, certainly. And I think maybe a little bit of it is just that Reading perhaps don't hold the glamour of a Premier League opponent potentially. But at the same time, I think if it was one of the big teams, I'd be absolutely shitting myself right now. So it's quite nice to sort of ease in to another Wembley trip, knowing that, we are favourites. But
I
think back to last year.
Yeah, when big team like Wigan.
I know, but the thing is, the atmosphere around the club was completely different, wasn't it? We were all very tense about that, and there was so much. Arsenal were such overwhelming favourites to win the competition already at that stage because of the other semi-final that, it all got a bit tetchy. So I'm hoping this time we might just be able to, enjoy it for what it is.
Yeah, sticking with you, it does feel like a very different a different atmosphere going into it, because there was so much pressure, wasn't there, this time last season, where the league title challenge that people were enjoying, and I don't know how people didn't enjoy that period when we were top of the table for a long time and playing pretty efficient football, if not the most exciting football you've ever seen from Arsenal. That fell apart, and then it felt like so much hinged on this FA Cup semi-final. But having won it last season, And playing the way we are at the moment, it just feels a little bit more more positive.
Oh, definitely. I mean, it feels great. I mean, this time last year, it certainly felt like over the course of the early parts of the season that the fan base had kind of healed a few of the rifts that were, you know, had opened up. But in the weeks before the semi-final, they'd all been kind of really opened up again, and they were, you know, they were pretty gruesome. And I remember being at the semi-final and just the arguments amongst fans in the Arsenal end when we were 1-0 down. It was just a really not a very nice atmosphere. And I ended up, I remember at the end of the season, picking Mertesacker's goal as the kind of the decisive goal of the season. I felt it was my favourite goal of the season because it really felt like an outpouring of emotion on the day. I mean, this year, it just couldn't be any more different. I mean, the club and pretty much every player has spoken of it. There's just everything seems to have clicked. The players have gelled. There's... I mean, the results speak for themselves. I mean, we're on an unbelievable run, the best we've been on in 10 years, and we're facing an opponent in Reading who, quite frankly, aren't having the greatest couple of months. I think they haven't won a game in six or something. So, you know, confidence is there. We just got to make sure that we, you know, temper that confidence and treat the game professionally.
Hollick, how much do we have to balance the... It's cup football. You can't take anything for granted. We all remember what happened against Wigan last year. With the fact that Arsenal are on a tremendous run, with a team that's probably better than the team that won the cup last season, playing against a team that's 18th in the Championship.
You're asking someone who was there and when we were 4-1 down in a League Cup tie at Reading a couple of years back. So yeah.
We not go on to win that 1-7-5 with consummate ease, with goals from Maro and Shamak and stuff?
Consumer ease doesn't come into it, but yeah, you're absolutely right. Now, I think this side at the moment, there is the only danger, of course, is in overconfidence and them being a little bit too cocksure of themselves. And I'm absolutely certain that Arsene's spoken about that in his press conference yesterday, that they've got that angle covered. What's most interesting for me is that they put together another performance because at Burnley, we weren't at our most... What's the word he likes to use as efficient? We didn't really get going at Burnley, did we? I'd like to see us do it at the weekend.
Yeah, probably a better pitch, just about.
Oh, yes.
At Wembley than the one at Turf Moor. Sticking with you, it's difficult to know what kind of changes he's going to make, but we know for sure that there's going to be at least one, and that's Wojciech Szczęsny coming in for David Ospina. And the irony, of course, is that Szczęsny, being the number one goalkeeper last season, was left out of the final, and having lost his place as the number one goalkeeper, could very well find himself playing in a final if we get past Reading. So it's a big game for him.
Yes, it certainly is. And as for the other 10, I think it was telling, again in the press conference when asked about whether he'd be using other players, Arsene didn't come out with the usual, well, we might be rotating a couple line, because he's used the same 11 players, or same 10 outfield players, let's put it, for the last two league matches. I think he's decided that's his best starting lineup at the moment, and I would be surprised to see that change. But what is interesting is what will happen on the bench, because at Burnley there was no Gabriel on the substitutes bench, there was no Jack Wilshere on the substitutes bench. Who is going to lose out in order to make way for those two? Because certainly Gabriel's got to get back on there if he's fit and well again. Yeah. You would have thought Wilshere has probably earned it with his performance in the under-21s the other night. So is there a shocking storm, maybe for Theo, maybe for Callum Chambers? I don't know.
Yeah, maybe Chambers might be the obvious one to miss out in that regard. Andrew, what do you reckon in terms of... the team and what he might do? I mean, I still think he might make a few changes, to be honest. He's got some form in that regard. If we remember in the semi-final last season, and I don't know if this is to do with squad rotation or faith in a player or underestimating the opposition, but he started Yaya Sanogo in the semi-final against Wigan. This time, if he does decide to leave Olivier Giroud out, he's got a much more reliable, a higher quality option at his disposal in Danny Welbeck, whose goal against Manchester United got us into this game.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, you're very right about Arsenal springing the odd surprise in the FA Cup. I mean, it is a competition that, you know, Thierry Henry didn't often play in. I mean, we had that 2005 final where Dennis Bergkamp started up front with Ali Adier, and then you know, a few years ago when we were in the semi-final against Chelsea and Arshavin had just joined and was absolutely on fire, and he dropped Arshavin. So I wouldn't, like you say, be surprised if he uses the game as an opportunity to kind of, you know, for a couple of the new, well, I say the new guys, the like new signing guys back on the pitch. I think Jack will probably be on the bench. As for up front, I think Giroud may start. I wouldn't be surprised, though, if Welbeck gets a run out kind of on one of the flanks and he gives someone else a break. I think the interesting one will be at right back, whether Bellerin gets to keep his place. I guess you'd back him to at this stage. It's just difficult when you start to look at the games now with these players who are returning from injury, when they do get a game, because what's more important at this stage? I mean, obviously we'd like to win the FA Cup and we want to try and push on in the league, but every game's important. So at some point, something's got to give. Mm. Does Arsene think that this is the game that we can win and give minutes to those players? He may well do. So,
that's a gamble as well, though, isn't it? Because if it doesn't work, then the immediate reaction is, well, you had a winning team that's won eight games on the trot. Why would you mess around with that? I mean, there's 8 days between the semi-final and the Chelsea game the following week, so it's not as if, you know, there's midweek competition or anything like that to worry about.
No, it's true. I mean, I guess for...
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For JD Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/arsblog.
Arsene, he'll say that, I mean, he has a squad, not a set number of players who are that he trusts. So he backs everybody he has. And the other thing is if he wants to get these guys playing in the latter stages of the season, or if they need to come back, say there's an injury to someone, wouldn't it be good if they had some minutes competitively in a game where they've been trusted from the outset? I think Arsene's, you know, long in the tooth enough to be able to take the risk and not worry too much about the consequences. But I'd say if we can't beat Reading with the squad that we've got, let alone, you know, the squad that's on the great form that we've got at the moment, then, you know, we've probably got bigger problems than the odd decision here and there.
That's true. I mean, if he does pick Sonogo in a semi-final last season when Sonogo was even more raw than he is this season, and still is.
Yeah. If he picks Sonogo this time, that would be a surprise.
That certainly would be a turn-up for the books. Holly, do you see any changes anywhere? I mean, could Kieran Gibbs come in for Nacho Monreal, for example?
It's a possibility, but no, I really do think he's settled on his outfield 10 for now. Like you say, the gap between the games, now that we haven't got the Champions League and all these midweek games to worry about, other than all the ones that are getting shifted to Monday at 8 o'clock so nobody can get there. I really do think he's going to go with the same outfield 10, and they're just producing such a run. I think the balance of the side looks right. We've got that balance between particularly defence and attack in the midfield five is absolutely cracking at the moment. So I would stay with it.
Do you see, for example, Aaron Ramsey continuing on the right-hand side of midfield, which is an interesting development in terms of the team, and obviously it's having implications for somebody like Theo Walcott, who now appears to be very open to discussing a new contract. Despite the fact that he's not playing, certainly that's the story that's going around. So, is Ramsey going to continue on the right-hand side, or could he modify the way the team is set up slightly, where he could move Ramsey more central, shift Alexis to the right, Ozil on the left a little bit?
I think they do that during the course of the game. There is a fair bit of flexibility in there if you have a look. And particularly Ozil, Alexis and Cavola do an awful lot of interchanging. But yes, Ramsey comes into that as well. And it gives you the option as well of dropping him back and playing alongside Coquelin if we need to steady the ship for a few minutes as well. So no, I think there's a nice little balance in there at the moment.
That is the thing though, Andrew, isn't it? It's just about trying to maintain the momentum without upsetting things too much. It's why I kind of think the fullbacks might be the obvious changes, and I think Welbeck for Giroud would be, I think he might do that. Fullbacks and striker, and the rest of it, you know, remains the balanced unit it has been over the last few weeks.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense. I certainly think, as you brought up earlier, that the team selection at Manchester United, when he chose Welbeck over Giroud, I mean, obviously there were, you know, Welbeck United connections there, which may have played a part. But I think he may well be tempted to stick with it in that case. I mean, Chamberlain started that day on the right and he's not played since. And it sounds as though he's out injured for a couple more weeks as well. So I guess if Welbeck goes on the goes up front, what happens on the right? Do they stick with Ramsey, or do we, you know, try and shuffle things around a little bit? I don't think it'll be too many changes, but whatever team he puts out, I firmly trust them to do the job. That's for sure.
All right. Well, there really isn't much point in discussing anything that isn't this game, because you can't look beyond it and the implications that it will have for the season and the rest of the season. But I wanted to talk maybe a little bit about what the FA have done. Like, this is their Premier Cup competition, and they've scheduled Chelsea versus Manchester United at the same time. Can anyone see any logic in that?
Well, I mean, when I saw the fixtures released, I can't remember whether the Arsenal game was pitted first and then Sky decided to kind of make a selection for their Saturday evening game, got the Manchester United game and decided to stick with it at that time. I'm not really sure on the flexibility of how many choices they get to go with. I mean, Sky already had it. Okay, yeah. So it's the BBC have decided to go head-to-head with Sky, in which case you can assume it must be a kind of corporation thing, and then it's about battling for that Saturday evening TV schedule, which then becomes a bigger argument, I guess, outside of football, isn't it?
Yeah.
And the BBC are pissed off because they've got no Premiership highlights even. Yeah. So they're quite happy to take on and make that a competition.
How do you mean they've got no highlights?
No live Premiership matches.
Ah, right, okay, sure.
Going on from that, what I can't believe is, although BBC have every right to pick what game they like, I can't believe, for example, the police have allowed the two games to take place at the same time.
Well, that was the other thing I was going to bring up. Obviously, Chelsea and, Chelsea are at home. I guess that happens where Chelsea and Arsenal are at home. But, you know, given that both games are evening kickoffs, and it's fair to say the odd pint might be consumed along the way, that it could cause some hassles, perhaps.
Yeah, I mean, I don't imagine there'll be kind of pitch battles in the streets of London or anything like that. I mean, for the most part,
last words, right there.
But I think I think what's strange is that it's not the first time this season that the BBC have tampered with the fixtures. I mean, I couldn't for the life of me see why they decided to put the the Manchester United game on the Monday night. I mean, that really didn't make sense for anybody because it took it out of a weekend schedule where surely they were likely to get loads and loads of viewers, and they forced, you know, all the Arsenal fans to go up to United at a ridiculous time, and they pretty much lost a PR battle on that because they looked like idiots amongst football fans. And now you've got to put kind of one of the most prestigious fixtures in Manchester United v Chelsea on at the exact same time as half that, you know, as Arsenal fans would love to watch that game. It's a big game, yeah. You know, that affects our chances in the Premier League. I mean, it is incredibly frustrating. And you kind of, you know, for even Arsene Wenger to mention it in the press conference today and just sort of raise an eyebrow and say, look, I was really surprised. It sounds like, you know, you'd have thought the contracts would stipulate that you don't basically have two of the main competitions in England battling for each other's affections. It's stupid amongst fans, you know.
Yeah. I mean, ultimately, both games take away from each other in a way, you know, from a viewing point of view. It's only going to split viewers. I suppose Chelsea versus Manchester United is going to be a bit more attractive to the neutral, though, which then takes away from the FA Cup itself. And, you know, they've done so much damage to the club as a tournament in the way that they've run it, you know, having the semi-finals at Wembley for so many years, which is just pretty awful. The shambles that is Wembley, in terms of the atmosphere before the game, loud music, you know, everything else, you would think they would do more to protect this particular tournament, Holly.
Yeah, I can't understand for the life of me why, for example, the whether it was us on Saturday or whoever, there's no reason why you can't have a semi-final kicking off at 3 o'clock, and it's probably an awful lot better for everybody concerned. The supporters are going to be able to get there and get home. All right, there's not going to be that much of a problem for Arsenal and Reading anyway, but yeah. You know, if you've got Liverpool playing at the same time, then are they going to get trains home? Is everybody going to have to come down? I don't think the supporters get thought of at all when these things are being discussed. And you're not going to tell me that at 3 o'clock on a Saturday, they're not going to get a big television audience for an FA Cup semi-final.
Absolutely. Are they allowed to show a game at 3 o'clock on a Saturday? I mean, is that, even if it's the FA Cup?
I know they can't.
There's this archaic law, isn't there, between...
Yeah, I know they can't in the Premier League.
I don't think, but you can show any live football, because remember there was a Clásico that kicked off, 4:45 or something like that, you know, and they missed the first 15 minutes of the game. Sky weren't even allowed to show Spanish football between 3 and 5, so maybe that's the issue with a game on Saturday.
Well, the thing is, I mean, it wouldn't be that difficult to put both games on the Sunday and just have one after the other, you know.
You mean Chelsea, Man United and...
No, well, I mean Arsenal and Reading. This is because they have to use Wembley, I guess. I was just thinking back to the old days when, you know, you could put two semi-finals one after the other because they were in two different parts of the country.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
No, obviously, I've completely neglected the whole Wembley thing.
Oh, you've completely forgotten about Liverpool and Aston Villa. They're irrelevant.
Yeah, they are. Well, yeah, I'd probably at this point, given how confused I've just got, probably suggest they play at Villa Park as well.
If we give everybody a set of ice skates, it'll be fine. Right, look, very quickly, I want to move on and final thing to talk about. Andrew, Alexis Sanchez is one of the nominations for the Player of the Year. Does he deserve to win it? Can he push? I guess Eden Hazard is going to be the guy who's going to be right up there. I mean, Coutinho, what the fuck? You know, is Alexis going to be up there, or do we give a shit one way or the other?
I think if you ask any neutral football fan whether they've enjoyed Alexis Sanchez this year, they would all say yes. I think he's a player who's definitely brought something new to the Premier League, and he's done brilliantly. I mean, 20 goals. I think I was just watching Sky just now, and they said that his assists and scoring record is up there with Hazard.
It's better than Hazard.
Yeah, it's better than Hazard. But I mean, he's not going to win it, I don't think. I think Hazard will win it, and I've got this feeling that, you know, Kane will have got a whole host of votes given the timing of the election process, and obviously he's flavour of the month. He's had so many headlines, and at the time the players were voting, I think he'd just been called up to England, he'd just scored and all the rest of it. So I suspect that there'll be a wave of support for him. I'm surprised more that Coutinho got a got a nod. I can't help but think, and obviously I'm biased, but I think Cazorla has had a much better season than Coutinho. But no, good on Alexis. I think that's a real kind of tip of the cap to him for a first season to be nominated. I mean, it doesn't happen to many players.
Mm. Hollick, your thoughts? Should we be worried about individual awards in a team game?
Worried, no, but it'd be something else to crow about were he to get it, wouldn't it? But I agree. I take the point. I'm not entirely sure he's our best player because, as Andrew just mentioned, Santi Cazorla, I think, has been an absolute revelation this season.
Oh, I love Santi too, but in terms of end product and impact on the team and just pure
end product, points. I'll give you, but impact on the team, I think he's been the most significant player we've had on the park.
I love season. It, but come on, we could have possibly done without Santi, but we could not have done without Alexis's goals. Would that be fair? Or,
No, I don't think we could have done it without Santi.
Right.
It's interesting. I feel like a bit like used to happen with the Invincibles team, there's been a bit of a baton passed from sort of section to section of the season. I used to sort of feel that when Henry went out of form, Pires would come into it. And even when Pires dropped, Bergkamp and Lundberg, or even a Wiltord would come in. And this season, I feel like we started to build up some of that momentum. And, Alexis obviously carried the team on his back for early parts of the season. And then Santi really stepped up just after Christmas. And since then, we've had Mesut come back and he's been brilliant. And Ramsey's come back into it as well. And, I think Arsene would point out and say, look, team is what matters. These individual awards. I think even Mourinho was saying the other day that he thought the individual awards were a little bit silly. But
You're right about Coutinho. I mean, he's not even fit to be Santi's butler.
Yeah. Yeah.
I like the idea of Santi Cazorla having a butler.
If anything, Santi looks like a butler, doesn't he?
He does, yeah. And he'd be a really conscientious butler because he's so happy and he'd like to make you happy with a, 3 o'clock in the morning and you want a sandwich, Santi would be there and he'd get up and make it for you.
Yeah, he could make it with his left hand, he could make it with his right hand.
Cut the cheese with one hand and, slice the ham with the other. Be brilliant. And, of course, Diego Costa up for a Young Player of the Year, 18 years of age. It's fantastic.
Yeah. Well, actually, that's interesting because we're up against Yakubu this weekend. He must be about 70 by now.
Is he playing for Reading?
He's playing for Reading, yeah.
Holy shit.
Yeah. They've got a few old names in there.
Obafemi Martins?
Was it Pogrebniak, the Russian guy's there.
Is he still there?
He's still there. Anton Ferdinand is there, so we get to, enjoy the delights of Anton.
Right.
Yeah, Zat Knight, there's a name from the past as well.
Wow. Yeah. Did he? Oh, no, that was Curtis Davis. I always mix him up. Curtis Davis, because they're both very tall.
They are very tall.
All right. Well, look, gents, thank you very much indeed for your time. Let's keep fingers crossed for the weekend that we can make it to Wembley for a second time at the end of May. Gunnar Hollick, thank you.
Thank you very much, Blogs.
And Andrew Allen, cheers as always.
Thank you very much.
Thank you indeed to the gentlemen in question. You know where to find them. You can get Gunnar Hollick at GunnarHollick.com or on Twitter at TheGunnarHollick. And Andrew, you'll find him writing for Arseblog News. And, of course, he's on Twitter at AAllenSport, at AAllenSport. I have to admit, at this point in the evening, having been up really ridiculously early to travel back from Oslo, I am absolutely exhausted. I'm wrecked. I can't even think about what it is that I should be talking about. I know I normally do a bit of team news, but there really isn't any other than Mikel Arteta is out, Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain is out. That is the team update. We've already discussed what the manager might do or might not do with his team. And my brain is operating at a level where I think it needs to shut down for a while. Just needs to just completely switch off and not do anything. So I apologize for the rather terse or abrupt way that this podcast is coming to a close. But I think, you have to know your limits. Is that right? Or you have to be able to accept when you're not in the right frame of mind to do something, and I'm absolutely and completely not in the right frame of mind to do any more podcasting this evening. So I apologize. But hey, look, it doesn't happen very often, and I will be here on Monday with James. We'll have an Arsecast extra for you on Monday. So all I can say is let's keep fingers crossed for tomorrow evening at Wembley. If you're going, have a great day out. Hopefully those wankers at Wembley won't spoil everything by playing the music too loud, you know, drowning out the atmosphere of the fans and everything else. And let's hope that we get the right result and find ourselves in an FA Cup final at the end of May, which would be jolly nice indeed. Don't know who it's going to be against yet. Aston Villa or Liverpool? Brendan Rodgers or Tim Sherwood? Whoever wins and whoever gets through, you know the FA Cup final is going to be between Arsenal and a team managed by a man that you would never, ever want your daughter to go out with. So we'll have to wait and see what happens. But look, I'm going to leave it there because I just can't. I'll talk to you on the Arsecast Extra on Monday. And of course, you'll be covering the match and everything over the weekend. So fingers crossed, come on the Arsenal. And I'll catch you on next week's Arsecast. So until then, cheers. Bye-bye. Please note that the end bits of the Arsecast are now sponsored by the History Channel and will contain snippets of informative and educational content. Today, we're looking at Archduke Anton Ferdinand. He was born in 1863 and was a prince of Hungary and Bohemia. In 1912, he invented the unicycle. In 1914, he was shot to death, bringing about the start of World War I. The assassin, one Bradley Cooper, escaped into space, traveling 2 years beyond Saturn and into a wormhole which would take him to a far distant galaxy. After killing Matt Damon on an icy planet, he then ended up behind a bookcase in his own house. A fucking bollocky bookcase in his own fucking house. Despite traveling light years through space and time, he's behind a fucking bookcase. In short, Christopher Nolan is a cunt. Please tune in next week for more from History End Bits.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.